It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wardrobe.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
First, this bulletin from the WOR newsroom. Six members of one family have been found shot to death in their night clothes in their expensive home in Amityville, Long Island.
Ronald DeFeo was demonically influenced in committing that horrible crime.
Amityville. Amityville's just a place. Something happened and that's it.
Ronald DeFeo said that there was a black, dark mass or shadow alongside of him, which was obsessing his thoughts and telling him to kill everybody.
Was Ronnie possessed?
No.
He was insane.
One of the biggest mysteries still lingering 25 years later is why none of the family members was awakened by the explosive burst of gunfire throughout the house.
You know I did this with other f***ing people, and you're all afraid to deal with reality because that's reality, not the coming out of your mouth.
The truth is always stranger than fiction. Forget George and Kathy Lutz and their fake-ass ghost story. You want some truth about that sinister-looking house on 112 Ocean Avenue in Amityville? Six people shot to death with a 35 Marlin rifle while they slept. Face down, nobody moved, nobody reported gunshots, and the eldest son, Ronnie DeFeo Jr., claiming voices in the house, told him to do it. These are all facts, my friends. And for that reason, we're leaving the Amityville Horror alone and going right for the sequel. Tonight, the world-famous Brian Stewart, cult sensation Nick McPherson, and myself will be spending the 29th podcast featuring Amityville 2, The Possession.
The thing I like about Amityville 2, The Possession, is that it's a prequel to the first movie, whereas it shows you the events. It's the story of basically, if this kid was on the level, and there was something malevolent in that house that made him kill his family, this would be the story. And I remember watching it when I was 10 years old, scared the fuck out of me.
Well, I'm actually a little bit disappointed by Amityville 2, because as much as I think they get the father right now, the son is way too much an innocent in the movie.
I mean, as opposed to Ronald, who was an asshole.
He was a bully, drug abuser, alcoholic, just an absolute ass. Mm-hmm. And you don't see any of that in the movie. And I almost wish they had made him his father's son, just so we could get the benefit of trying to be the judge ourselves.
You could see, though, that because the dad was the way he was, earlier in the story, he is at odds. And we should really let Nick watch the movie before we discuss that.
Yeah, shut your fucking mouth!
Brian Stewart hasn't seen it.
Ah, fuck you.
But I remember watching the Amityville 2 when I was about 10 years old, and for some reason this movie just scared the fuck out of me. I thought it was really well done. Yes, it borrows heavily from The Exorcist. Like, it rips The Exorcist off in more than a couple of ways.
I made my wife watch it a couple weeks
and
ago.
The Exorcist?
Yep.
And what'd she think? Let Jesus fuck you?
She was just killing.
Whoa.
You always remember the first time you watch a great horror film.
I had a cousin who was a few years older than me, and they had HBO, where they were running these horror movies, like, without commercials, completely uncut, rated R. And I remember borrowing this VHS tape from this cousin when I was a kid, and these people, God love them, they were true videophiles back in the early 80s VHS sense. I remember because the spine of the movie had the sticker on it. Remember the spine sticker on the VHSs?
Yep.
But they actually took the time to put the spines into a typewriter, and they typed out the names of these movies. Oh, usually wow. You'd see them written in either
Sharpie.
Marker
yeah.
or pen or something. Mm. These people actually taped these movies off HBO and then typed out in nice bold print from a typewriter onto the spine stickers and put them on the spines. And it, just looking at their movie collection, it was a thing of art. And fortunately for me, they were horror fans. So I remember borrowing this tape. It had first time I ever saw Amityville 2 and Halloween 3, because they were both on the same tape. I'll never forget that.
Now, Brian Stewart has seen this movie before, but Nick had not. This is the first time in a while that Nick was going into this movie blind. At the beginning of the film, we have the Montelli family arriving at their new home, this gorgeous Dutch colonial-style house by the water. Even with all the fallen, decayed leaves around the property, it's a fantastic-looking house.
Be it ever
Wait.
So.
One, two, three.
Be it ever so humble, there's no place like
What's this, the Andrews sisters?
Hi, Dad.
The very beginning of the movie is the family showing up and just being like, oh my God, look at this, this is great. And to be honest, looking at those grounds and the house itself, I would fucking love a house like that. As creepy as it is, it's huge, it's got the windows that are looking at you. I would love a big-ass colonial-style house like that.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder what idiot nailed all these windows shut.
Oh, God damn it. They nailed every window upstairs the same way.
Oh, no.
I have a good mind to call that asshole real estate guy.
But then they move in, and there's little things like, okay, the windows are nailed shut. Not really a red flag, just kind of something to make you go, huh.
You know what, though? But he pulled the nails out rather quickly and easily. It may have just been, like, deterrent for burglars or vandals or...
Agreed. And that's why it's not like, ooh.
Yeah.
And then she turns on the faucet and the blood comes out.
Well, I think it was blood.
You know, and you're like...
The pipes hadn't been used in a while, it was just rust.
And she's got a start, and that's why at the end when the water starts coming through and the blood, the rust color starts going out and it starts running water, she starts laughing in spite of herself because she spooked herself to see this.
I don't know how well I drink that water, but...
But when she's downstairs and the wind hits her and she freaks out, like, and she grabs her arm like something's touched her, you're like, what the hell is going on? And when she screams, that's a genuine scream, like, and the look on her face, like, her eyes are all wide, like, what the fuck was that? She doesn't know. And then when the sun comes down, it's like, did I scare you? And she's like, something just touched me. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? And she's like, something here now. She can't explain it. She's like, something was here. Yeah. It felt like something was on my arm.
Within 5 minutes, you know that something is very wrong in this house. There's some very strange things going on. And even by their first dinner under that roof, this family is beginning to become very hostile towards each other.
God damn!
Don't even look at me! I didn't put
that
goddamn nail
in!
Hey, hurry up!
Nonsense! Stop it! Can't we just eat our first meal in this house without fighting? It's all everybody's been doing ever since we got here is fighting. All right, I've had enough of it with you. I don't want to hear any more of it.
At the beginning, when they're sitting there, they're doing grace, and the house is showing them that it's not enjoying this grace. There's a small tremor, and the water comes down.
I had a hint of that being a very Italian thing, though, whereas the father was the head of the household, the mother was the head of the dinner. And at the dinner table, Mom was in charge.
Mom rules at the dinner table.
Yeah, I think that was her demand, because the father didn't say anything. He didn't speak up.
Because he started pissing on the son, and the son was trying to, like, no, it's not my fault. And she completely took over and started screaming at him, and even the dad, that was it. It was over. Mom had her way, and you know what? You guys are fucking, all we've been doing since we moved in here is scream at each other. Can we have one nice meal? Jesus Christ.
You think the first dinner in that house is bad? Wait till you see the first night they spend in it.
Probably one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when the hatch in the basement opens and you're that point of view of whatever's in that house is making its way out, comes up the stairs, and then it looks at the wall and they got the big crucifix on the
and
wall.
And that sound of the priest.
The creature.
The
you sound. Can hear it go, whoa, what the fuck is that? We do not like that. And then watching the tablecloth come up off the table and then cover it on the wall, like, no, you're not supposed to be there. I'm going to cover that.
There was also another cool effect. As it was moving through the house, you notice the clocks are ticking faster all of a sudden, and then it goes away as it passes.
Yep.
Like, it had an effect on everything it went by, except for the cross. The cross, it had to stay away from it. Backed it to the other side of the hall, gave it a wide berth. And then even when it pulls the cloth off the table, the flowers and everything still standing on the table.
That was a good effect. I really liked that effect.
Yeah.
Yep.
Another thing I like too, and actually the first time I watched the film, I remember I had a huge problem with the father, Burt Young, who I think played a great job. I just didn't believe a lot of the elements, like how stupid was this guy? That I remember when he walks in after the paintbrush scene, where it has that demonic thing painted on the children's wall, and it says, "Dishonor thy father."
That's right.
And the nicest possible handwriting. And I'm like, really? The kids at 3 feet tall are going to be able to paint all the way to the ceiling this demonic creature and write that?
In cursive, yeah.
And they're going to know, "Dishonor thy father," right? That's something a 6-year-old is going to be able to write. But he takes off the belt when he's about to beat his kids. I mean, he does it, says, this is something he's done a number of times. Yeah. They know.
Like he's, all he does is go for his pants, and they're like, no. They know what's coming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not
the kids were already saying, it wasn't us, it was the brushes.
That's
like,
right.
They've been beat before.
Yep.
But Daddy, it was the brushes! We didn't do it!
Mark, you think that's funny?
What are you talking about? He can't even cry!
What about her?
Don't touch her! Don't you touch her!
Fucking cut your own house! Get out of my way!
The one person who's probably the bravest, strongest figure in that household is going to be the father figure, but is also at the same time the one figure you can't trust. Who, you know, when the shit hits the fan, he's going to be just unstable and is probably causing a lot of the negative energy in the house in the first place. So, and that kind of puts you in a corner where the kids really don't have any real protector, except for maybe the mother, who's too weak and frail, who is just too much of, you know, she keeps pleading with the priest for help because, let's face it, she's not strong enough to fend on her own. She has to go outside the family to the priest for help.
Maker of heaven and earth, of all things seen and unseen. We believe in one Lord, Jesus Christ, the only Son of God.
Enter Father Adamski, played by James Olsen.
For some reason, the priest kind of irked me a little.
Really?
Yeah.
James Olsen.
Yeah.
He was almost too nice, too perfect, early on. But,
yeah, what priest, you know, meets you for the first time and then agrees to come bless your house? Like, I mean, the kids were still in their Sunday best. When the priest got
there, it was like, you know.
What the hell is the matter with you?
I don't go to church and you bring it here?
Yes, he's going to bless our house.
What?
Anthony, please. Please. Anthony, please go inside. Please be nice to him for me. Please.
I also thought it was a nice touch when she first brings the priest over. And he's pissed that he's there because he doesn't go to church and he didn't want him coming to the house.
I don't go to church and you bring it here?
And she begs and she kisses him on the hand. It's like, please, let me have this. And the way she pleads, I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah, like, please, just be nice to him.
And he tries.
Yeah, in his own kind of, well, smoke priest?
Want a smoke priest?
No, thank you.
You mind if I do?
Not at all.
When Father Adamski shows up, this is where the movie shifts into a different gear. The first part of the film is more of a haunted house flick, but the eldest boy, Sonny, well, the subtitle of the movie is The Possession. Whatever evil is in this house becomes latched onto this kid, and suddenly the focus is on him.
Father, this is my firstborn, Sonny. He hasn't been feeling well lately.
Good to meet you, Sonny.
Everything went wrong when he shook Sonny's hand.
Yeah, and when he shook Sonny's hand, that was it.
It was like two polar opposites touching, you know, it's like, you know, it should not happen.
It was like, this is not standing, and then he's forced out of the house, and before he leaves, he's given that last indignancy or the whatever's in the house shredded up his prayer book in the car. You know, like just in case you were wondering, you're not invited back. You know, this we do not want you back here. Have a fucking shredded up book.
My only criticism with this film, apart from the pacing, like you say, it could have been about 15 minutes shorter.
Mm-hmm. It could have been 20 minutes shorter.
Yeah. Is that once the demonic force in the house possesses Sonny and he becomes the focus of all the evil, it's less frightening. It's like once he becomes the one thing that we're all aware of is the demonic force and the house stops doing most of its crazy shit because it's all centered on him, it's... Like I say, I'm no longer afraid of the house. And once I'm no longer afraid of the house, you lose a lot of that atmosphere.
Agreed.
Until it immediately goes from, oh god, it's possessing me, oh god, now I'm going to do sexy time with my sister.
Yes. The evil makes Sonny shame his family, and he ends up...
Say what?
You know, he...
Say what? He sticks it in his fucking sister, okay? There, I said it.
What have you done with your brother?
Me?
What have you done?
Nothing!
Do you understand what you've done?
I like when the mother sees what's going on at the birthday party. The father's completely oblivious,
yeah, he doesn't,
of course, because he is such an idiot. But,
do you know what you've done?
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah, this movie would be pretty fun to go through and re-edit and toss in little extra things, like just to make it entertaining. Like the part where he's like, you know, in the confessional, and you see him shuffle and tell, like, you know, telling her to start over from the beginning. Tell me everything!
From the beginning.
Blasphemy.
Hear us, Holy Lord, Almighty Father, Eternal God.
Father Adamski does come back to bless the house, but this time around there is no mistake. Something in that house does not want him anywhere near Sonny Montelli.
Hello, Sonny.
Well, I love that. Yeah. I love the part where he's actually going through and sprinkling the house when he sees Sonny. He's just like, he can see a breeze coming from nowhere because Aaron is closing the door, smoke.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, at that point, if I was a priest, I'd be like, all right, fuck this shit, take it off.
Get out!
Sprinkle me with hyssop, O Lord, and make me clean.
When the blood flies out of it, and she's freaking out, and you don't know what she's screaming about. Like, she starts screaming, and you're like, what the fuck is she screaming about? And then you see the blood all over the place. And then he's like, oh my god, he goes and pukes, he's covered in blood, there's blood on the bed.
He's trying to drink water from his bloody hand, which I thought was like, really?
He's trying to rinse his puke-filled mouth out with water, he's
with covered a bloody hand. Blood.
H2O negative.
And then he comes out and he's completely clean, and he's looking and all the blood is gone, and he's clean, and he's wondering what the fuck is going on, and then it cuts to the son laughing his fucking ass off. What a cruel joke to play on this guy, you know what I mean?
Adamski thinks he has enough evidence for an exorcism, but his superiors are not so sure.
Well, I may need approval for an exorcism.
An exorcism?
After what happened in the house?
Wait a minute. The worst thing in this whole area, and you know this, Father, is to rush into anything.
Frankly, I don't think we have time.
Father, I will be in touch with you. We will take our time.
Time is exactly what this family is about to run out of.
Father? I'm worried. I'm worried about Sonny. Afraid of him. I don't know why, but I think he wants to kill us.
No.
You must do it now.
you got to do it. You're going to get up and you're going to kill this family now. And at first he resists. He's like, no, no, I can't do this. But he gets up and the camera starts doing the 360.
The spinnies, yeah.
The 360 around the room. And then, you know, and it goes around and it goes around and it goes around. And then it comes to a stop on Sonny and he's completely demonized. He's got that fucking makeup on his face.
Crazy eyes,
and
yeah.
He's looking right at the camera. He's looking right at you. That scared the hell out of me. Like, just that scene scared the hell out of me.
I was a kid? Yeah, that fucked you up.
And then it went into the massacre. You are forced to invest heavily in this family for a good 70-75 minutes, only to have them be done away with in a way that just, it was shocking to me, you know.
Yeah.
Mommy!
There's two small children in this movie who are gunned down viciously by a family member. I had never seen anything like that before. I'd never seen kids killed like that. This was the first time I'd ever been subjected to young children being gunned down. The whole implied idea of it was shocking to me.
The scene that really gets me is the scene where the older sister's talking and the young brother's across the hallway. And she's too afraid to tell him to come to him. Even just crossing the hallway is too much movement. It would give them away, and that's it. They're too afraid to move 4 feet. He's like, just hide, hide. And of course, he's paralyzed with fear. He can't move.
And you can see the shadow of the gun coming from the upper level, you know, as he's descending down the stairs. And she's trying to tell the little brother, hide, hide, hide. You gotta hide or he's gonna get you. Another element I really liked about this, she goes downstairs, she's trying the door, it's locked. She tries a window, it's locked. She tries another window, it's locked. And just as you're thinking, you stupid fucking bitch, grab something tough and throw it through a window. Sure enough, she grabs a wooden chair and tries to smash the window, and the window won't break.
Yeah.
Because the house is telling her, you fucking aren't getting out of here. So it's not one of these movies where you're watching somebody do something fucking stupid and dies because of it.
Yeah.
She actually does the correct thing. Tries to get out, and the house won't let her go. And you're like, fuck, what is she gonna do? I really like that element. They weren't stupid about it.
No. But we really know that scene interesting, that after every death, the more glimpses we get to see of him, he becomes more demonic as the scene goes on. So by the time he gets to the end and kills the older sister, he is full-fledged demon makeup at that point.
Let me take you out of the fiction for a moment. This film is very much based on real events. Forget the demon, the possession, all that shit. That's Hollywood. But the fact is, on the night of November 13th, 1974, 6 people, a mother, a father, and 4 children, were shot and killed with a 35-gauge Marlin rifle while they slept in a black Dutch colonial-style home at what was then 112 Ocean Avenue in Amityville. The DeFeo family was systematically killed, all found in their beds, face down. 2 days later, the only surviving family member, the eldest son, Ronald DeFeo Jr., admitted to the killings. At first, he tried to pin it on the mob, since the family had big ties into the mafia, but that was quickly refuted. However, big questions have yet to be answered about the crime. And I'll let Ronnie himself ask the million-dollar question.
How could one person go through the house and kill 6 people the way they think they were killed?
No one reported hearing any gunshots in the community. None of the victims even had a chance to get out of bed. There were some that suggested a silencer was involved, but no evidence of such a device was used. Some claims the victims were drugged. Toxicology came back negative on all of them. Ronnie was a habitual drunk and heroin abuser, and through the advice of his lawyer, he went on the stand and told 100 different versions of the story, including hearing demonic voices in the house telling him to do it. Ronnie is still, to this day, serving 6 consecutive life terms for this crime. And because of all the false testimonies, the fact that Ronnie was higher than a kite when these murders took place and probably can't even correctly recall the events himself, I believe that we will never truly know exactly what happened in that house. So the Montelli family is dead, Sonny is in custody with complete amnesia, and Father Adamski feels responsible for not acting against the evil sooner.
When the priest has a stake in this, I mean, he feels guilt because he goes off on vacation and he kind of ignores the pleas of the older sister there. And when he does so, he feels that if he had acted, he may have been able to avert this whole
save their lives. Yes.
I ask one thing. The authority to perform an exorcism on Sonny Montelli.
The bishop does not think you are qualified, nor, above all, have the correct steadiness of character.
Let me talk to the bishop.
The bishop wants to talk to you, but we'll tell you when. Now you are to go home and remain there. Do not do anything on your own initiative and wait for our call.
The church doesn't want him to do this. The evil knows that he needs the authority of the church to continue with his path, and he doesn't have it. He's like, you can't do what you're planning on doing to stop me. And he's like, well, how do you know that? We know everything.
I told you you'd have to leave.
You want to destroy this boy's life.
I do what I want.
I will cast you out.
Oh? How?
With an exorcism.
You can't do that. You're not authorized.
How do you know?
We know everything.
Adamski has to somehow get Sonny to church to perform this exorcism, but he's at a hospital in police custody awaiting trial. Fortunately, the sergeant on duty witnesses a manifestation that's all too familiar with horror fans, and only then does he agree to hand Sonny over to the priest.
And that right there was the big Exorcist ripoff, was the whole save me on the
ear.
Yeah. I mean, if you remember from The Exorcist, they bring the Father Karras in, and they lift up her shirt, and help me comes bubbling up on the skin on her stomach. And it was that was a big page from The Exorcist, was the whole save me manifesting in blood on his arm while he was in a catatonic state. That was right from The Exorcist.
Yeah.
But Adamski loses Sonny on their way to church, and he knows precisely where the demon is going. This holy battle will now have to be fought in that house.
I like how they built up the fact that he was basically a renegade priest.
Yep.
That he was pretty well on his own. He breaks the law in order to do what he thinks is right, so that by the time you get to that final confrontation, and that wall of fire goes up when they get to the church, and then he approaches the house. At that point, you know that he is pretty well going to be derobed, right?
Defrocked.
You know he's probably going to go to jail for this, and that everything's on the line. So he's pretty well forfeited his life, more or less, and that it really does feel like everything has been laid on the line for this final confrontation.
Yes.
And they do build that rather well. On that final sequence, when the priest enters through the through the cellar doors, and makes his way up through the basement of the house. That is going to be some of the best stuff I've seen in horror. I love that whole sequence.
You like that? You're seeing the entities come through and the blood coming down the walls and
it's beautiful.
Foamy blood on the floor.
Well, I love the fact that they had a set where I bought that there was a storm going on in that house.
Yes, I did. Everything for that whole sequence is believable. The other thing I like too is that all of that dampness, all that dripping moisture and decay, which was concealed behind that basement door, that door in the closet, has now seeped into the rest of the basement. And now the whole basement has become essentially what's behind that door. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the evil force has encroached upon the house.
Yeah.
And it's now taken root.
Well, even if you look at, like, I don't know how long this was supposed to be, like, the lapse between when he shot him and when they went back there. But that whole house was looking pretty shabby.
Yeah, it was.
Like the wallpaper was peeling off, all the windows were boarded. It looked like a different house.
It looked like a crack house.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Fear. Him who was crucified as a man and who rose from death. We'll be right back.
how did you feel when he was saying the prayer and he walks into that room? Because the door flies open and he knows that's where he's got to go. He walks in, he's doing the
and he gets the prayer, assaulted right away.
And the guy's coming out like he's floating over him, and that weird shot of him kind of flying vertically towards him. That always bothered me. There was just something wrong about that scene, but it worked so well.
What I like about it is the follow-up when he produces the cross, and it sends him flying across the room in that really like long rolling scene.
Oh yeah, that was like
that
way
was
too
really
fat.
Well done.
Yeah, that was creepy.
It was the right amount of sped up photography.
Well, not too fast to be comedic, but just fast enough to be unnatural.
Yeah, unnatural, exactly. And then he's kind of crouched in the corner after he comes out of the role, and he's like cowering at that point. And just with the force of that cross being produced makes you really believe in the supernatural power. You know, like in The Exorcist, yes, you know, the priests seem to have some effect on the poor, you know, possessed girl, and, you know, there's writhing, there's, you know, the swearing, and it looks like they're doing battle, but you don't get any sense of energy in those scenes. This, there's, like, real force, like, he's being flung across the room by just, you know, the power of the cross. That was kind of neat.
And then he's tempted.
Yeah.
And then he's tempted with the sister, because the evil knows, you wanted to fuck that little girl, didn't you? So what does it do? It manifests into a horde-up version of that girl just to tempt him, just to throw him off track.
Look at me! Confess! Dirty priest! You wanted it! You wanted it!
Creator of heaven and earth, you are the true king. Your kingdom is without end. Humbly, I supplicate your majesty and your glory that you deign to free this your servant from unclean spirits. Prince of lies, return to the depths of darkness!
A big criticism of this movie that I've read is that it borrows too heavily from The Exorcist. And yeah. I can see how, but at the same time, I watched this movie and I see where it borrowed elements of other films that, dare I say, are better than Amityville 2, but at no point did I think that it was trying to rip them off. You know, Amityville 2 is its own film.
You've decided to do this on your own, without the support of the church. You are disobeying the church. Now you are alone, Adamski.
One exception. The exorcism at the end, when the priest says, "Let it be me," I thought that was didn't make any sense. He was winning that battle. He didn't have to bargain his way out. He was winning that fight. And for him to say, "Let it be me," seems to come out of nowhere and does really parallel Exorcist.
Yeah, but he's watching this kid. He's trying desperately to save the soul and body of this kid, and he's watching him materialize into this thing.
Right.
Yeah. And that's when he's kind of tipping. He's like, "Well, you know what? Just put this on me."
I always love a film that leaves you with a sour feeling, and although Father Adamski does technically win this spiritual battle and save the life and soul of Sonny Montelli, the end of Amityville 2 is anything but happy.
It does not have a happy ending. Like, okay, is the soul of Sonny saved? Sure. Does that mean he's not going to go to jail for the rest of his life for the crimes? No. In the end, he's in a cop car being carted back to the
actually,
law.
Actually, worse now, he'll probably appear to be sane on the stand.
Yeah.
Right? So.
And the priest that, you know, we're trying to champion through this whole thing, who has actually done the exorcism and came out on top spiritually, now has this supernatural demonic affliction upon him. And I like how it doesn't even say anything. It's just like, "Oh, Jesus Christ, don't let this happen to me." And he's like,
"Don't forsake
me." And he's got that look on his face like, "This is happening. There's nothing I can do about this." And then it. Just
Lord,
cut to an exterior of the house.
Lord, do not forsake me.
And the house is up for sale again. Yeah. And that is it. Favorite scenes, Brian Stewart.
Everything after the priest walks in through the cellar doors at the end. That whole sequence from beginning to end is fantastic, with the exception of, as you say, the transformation sequence of Sonny tearing his own face apart. That did not, it didn't even look real. It looked like one giant clay head inside of another clay head.
Yeah.
And I didn't buy it. It was kind of silly after a point. Like, it started looking
interesting.
The thing
on the inside was pretty damn funny. It
was pretty fucked up, and at the same time, it wasn't real.
However, if you watch Amityville 3, which is called The Demon, and it was shot in 3D because it was 1983. Remember 1983? Like everything in 1983.
Jaws 3D.
Jaws 3D, Friday the 13th 3D. All those movies in 1983 were 3D. Amityville was no exception. There is a scene where there's a well in the basement and a thing pops out of it, and it looks very much like this thing that you see at the end. So now that I've seen 2 and 3, I appreciate that.
And it doesn't end at 3. There are currently tons of Amityville titles.
Maybe watch 1. Definitely watch 2. 3's not as good, but watch that. But after 3, there's about 18,000 Amityville movies, and the ones that I've seen fucking suck. I've seen Amityville 4, the beginning, blows. 5, 6, 7, that was it. I wasn't watching anymore. Amityville 8 was called The Dollhouse. I'm like, no. And there was like Amityville 1992, Amityville It's About Time. They're still pumping out Amityville movies. 2013, there was an Amityville movie. I'm not even going to touch it. I don't even want to go there because they just got bad.
Though the 05 remake isn't bad. But, favorite scene. I liked this spinny scene for two different reasons. One, because the whole sudden stop, you know, creepy face, the whole yell. You can tell he's just like, kill them now. He's like, no, I don't want to. Okay. Like, it was like the last thing before, that's it, demon, you know.
The family holocaust.
Pretty much. The demon take the wheel, and then you hear the banging afterwards. And at first, like, you hear the noise, and you think, oh, was it like the Nicky Nicky 9 door type thing? And, it's like, and then you realize when the sister goes downstairs, oh, that's what he was doing. He was driving railroad spikes into all the doors.
Yeah.
Who gave you permission to let the people in a court of law believe that the church was preparing to perform an exorcism? You told me. I told you I was going to talk to the bishop, but you anticipated his decision and put the church in a bad light.
Score it. I think, for me, I'm going to give it a solid... You know, I'm going to compare this to other Haunted House films we've seen, and so the bar is already set pretty high. I think I'm going to give it a 7.5. I mean, obviously the change they proved to us that you don't need a lot of gore to make a great horror film. You just need atmosphere, and just the idea of what happened to poor Joseph is terrifying enough.
Yep.
And, you know, so you don't need gore to make it frightening or chilling or to make it stick with you.
Don't be smart, boy. You're not too big for a whipping.
Yeah, I know. You proved that to me.
Okay. You know, you're pushing it. You're right on the edge.
Dad, I just stopped at the corner for a pack of cigarettes.
Stop your whining.
Well, we'll go with our continual thing of Stuart always being half point above me. I was going to give it a 7.
I am listening to my own conscience. The facts, the sprinkler, the diabolical influence in that house. You didn't listen.
I'll give it an 8. You know, it's not my favorite horror movie. This is one of those movies I'll watch it once every 5 years. I do, the reason I really wanted to do this, and I'm glad you guys came over to watch this, was because this was one of the movies where I watched it just as I was getting into horror at a very young age, and I remember being 10 years old and watching this full, uncut, on my cousin's VHS, and it scared the fuck out of me. It scared the hell out of me. And I appreciate it for pushing the envelope for early 80s horror, like mainstream early 80s horror. This was a Dino De Laurentiis movie.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that did Dune and you know, multi-million-dollar movies, he actually produced this film, and it pushed the envelope. It had children being murdered. I'd never seen that before. Yeah. Good versus evil. It didn't have a happy ending. I love the fucking house. I love the house. The house just looks, with those windows on the top floor that look like they're staring at you. I mean, I just... Everything about the house I love. It just, if you were going to think about a house that was demonic or evil, it would look like that kind of colonial style house.
My friends, there you have it. The Amityville Show, featuring the second film in the series, Amityville 2, The Possession. Starring Burt Young and James Olsen as Father Adamski. If you haven't seen it, please get your hands on it. The first three Amityville films have recently become available on Blu-ray from our friends at Shout Factory. Our suggestion, check out the first three films. They're worth your time. If you want to explore further into the Amityville saga, by all means, explore. And if you have the stomach for it, Google the DeFeo murders to get the scoop on the real murders that this film is based on. You want real nightmares? It's waiting for you, I guarantee it. I know you've been waiting a long time for this show. Thank you for your patience. The next show is our 30th episode. We're hoping to shake it up a little bit and get our listeners involved in the next show. Check out Horror 101 on Facebook. Friend us and stay tuned for what's coming up next. If you want to be part of the next show, we'd love to have you. Exciting times to come. Thank you very much for listening. And for the world-famous Brian Stewart and the cult sensation Nick McPherson, this is Cash Wampum bidding you farewell. Until the next time, we know that there is a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. We're going to help you find it right here in Horror 101, Educating Your Fears.